Welcome to this evening's budget scrutiny panel. I will just run through some matters of business. Rebecca, do we have any apologies, please?
Yes, from Councillor Wesley.
Okay, thank you. Happy to accept that, councillors. Any disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests? No. Thank you. We don't have any declarations from party whips. Do we have any questions on the scrutiny committee procedure 11.16?
No, not really.
Okay, thank you. Right, okay then. So, first item on our agenda is just to review the scrutiny timetable. Obviously, the first meeting this evening is more of a planning meeting before we actually get some items to look at on the 12th of December. Third meeting planned in for January the 3rd. Does anybody have any comments or anything that they'd like to raise on the outline agenda? This budget scrutiny panel tends to be quite fluid because we are sort of reliant on information coming in. So, generally, I think as it says in the papers, they have to, concoct ways to get the reports done quickly.
Yeah.
So, but we'll deal with that one when we can. Okay, so if we're all happy with that, we'll move on to the financial position of the council, which I believe someone's in the presentation. Before we start, I'll just ask Councillor Ashcroft if he has any comment he'd like to make before we kick off.
No, I'm giving a verbal report on the report I submitted earlier, and I think some of the aspects of Simon's will also be picked up in the report I present. So there's no comment at the moment on what Simon's presenting.
Okay, thanks very much. Well, in that case, then we'll hand over to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I mean, this is
for the recording, Councillor speak just then.
Misjudged the person.
So just as context, what we do is a formal medium term financial strategy, or essentially a financial outlook that we publish. Which goes to Cabinet in February and then is adopted by Council at the end of February. So that covers the forthcoming budget year and also the two subsequent years. What these numbers here represent are essentially a reflection of those numbers as adjusted for things that we become aware of in the ensuing months. So basically this is the end of October, these numbers sort of cover up to September really. The nature of these projections is actually in a way every single day almost you find some new information, so you can change your projections every single day, but these are sort of reasonably current and reasonably updated, we know. So I just thought in terms of structuring this, the financial outlook and the sort of A to F sort of represents some of the sort of key elements of our funding, income and costs. So I'd sort of take each one of those in turn and see what we make of them. This is a view about where we are on these particular aspects going forward. So start with council tax. Council tax is capped. It's been capped for a number of years, or which basically means we have to stick within those limits unless we decide to call a referendum to increase council tax beyond this sort of capped limits. Now, I don't know of any council that's ever had a referendum and been successful. I'm not even sure I know of one that's had a referendum and failed. But basically, it's not something you do because if you have a referendum, it's about £100,000 or so in election costs. And if you fail, then it's just £100,000 gone down the drain. So basically, the capping limit is practice. It's set every year, actually, by as part of the autumn statement and the financial settlement. but it's been sort of 3% or £5 for a number of years, and we think that's likely to continue for this year. We're also assuming a 3% limit. So the good news on council taxes. So the bad news is we're sort of trapped into our current council tax rate, essentially. The good news is this is an income stream you can pretty much rely on. There is obviously a little bit of variation, but not very significant. So those numbers just show a small increase based on the percentage increase in the tax rate, plus also growth in housing in the borough. So
Simon, can I just ask you a question? You spotted this and I wasn't sure how we got to it. What is the MTFS tracker?
Oh, right, that's
quite a few things.
Yeah, sorry, that is all that is there's the MTFS, and then that's just the process by which we're doing the update. So the MTFS is what we had in January. The tracker is just basically it's just a name for the spreadsheet we have to actually do the update. So behind this, there is a spreadsheet with where we think the movements are. It's quite an ugly thing, so I didn't want to present the spreadsheet, but these numbers are on that. Apologies for that.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to be gentle with me. What's the top set of figures compared to the bottom set of figures?
So the top set is the top set was what we had in the MTFS, and the bottom set is what we had in the tracker. So the grey bits are what we said back in January, and the brown bits are what we're saying when we've updated them.
So it's the January.
So you can see we're pretty much... very small differences on this one. The 26-27, there's not a lot of science behind that one because the MTFS covers 3 years, but obviously we're just looking forward another year. But really all we're saying there is that there's, again, probably not a huge amount of change. So council tax, key message about council tax is it's a pretty stable source of income for us over the years. It's increasing importance in percentages. Okay, so this bit's more interesting, if you like, and there's quite a little bit more volatility around that. So we do take advice from Pixel, who are a sort of a consultancy firm. They were partnered with CIPRA, I don't think they are now. But what Pixel do is sort of read the rooms of various government settlements, and they'll sort of look at what the total... They talk about things like the DEL, which is a total departmental budget for DLUC, et cetera. And they'll look at sort of the overall spending patterns and construe from that what the overall settlement for local government's likely to look like. Now, for us, they'll sort of guess what the overall size of the pie is, and they'll make some sort of predictions, obviously, as far as the overall size of the pie is, what's our particular slice and it going to be. But since we The projections we did in January were relatively conservative. So or prudent, if you like. What we're seeing now is that, and we actually assumed there would be a reduction in grant funding. But the messages we're getting now is actually it's likely to be maybe potentially even a real terms increase, or certainly an inflation increase, which doesn't make us rich beyond the dreams of our risk, but it does be optimistic position and a somewhat pessimistic position we had previously. A lot of this is politics, so pays your money and takes your choice. So when is the next election going to be? But in 2024-25, we are promised something very much. The government promised structure of the settlement would be as 2023-24. So it'll be in a way it's a sort of one-off sticking plaster type of thing, but there'll be damping transitional funding, so we wouldn't expect a lot better or worse than what we had previously, and based on what we've been told, it may be slightly better. In 25-26, the suggestion is it's cash flat, so that'll be, in real terms, that would be a reduction, but so again, compared to what we had in the original MTFS, that's a more positive picture. I've just got a line there about EPR, which is the extended producer responsibility. which is part of the Environment Act, and that's a big unknown. So the government is going to start collecting tax from producers on their packaging, and then that's going to be redistributed to us. But I think that one's now gone back. That's now gone back a year. But it's one of these things where the government always say, you know, councils will be fully compensated for the additional responsibilities and duties around recycling and waste collection, etc.
Can you just tell us, me, EPR again?
Sorry, extended producer responsibility.
Thank you.
No, it's there's lots of things coming out. There's lots of things actually connected with the Environment Act. So that was actually enacted in November 21. So when we get into risks, I'll mention one of those. But it is, so there's some big things happening. It's quite important, but as often with these things, we don't know that the devil's in the detail, which we know little of yet. I think there was a letter came out actually the last day or two, which gave us some additional detail about the about recycling and how it's going to work. But still, lots that we don't know. So, in terms of changes in this 26-27. The way the election cycle works, that's the earliest likely date. So if there's a general election in May 24, which is probably the earliest, again, occasionally takes your choice, so that's probably the earliest possible date. If they were going to, so that's May 24, if they were going to change the financial regime for 25-26, the government would need to start a consultation in the summer of 2024, ready for the autumn statement in autumn 24. So actually, a government that's elected in May 25 would have about 5 or 6 weeks to come up with something very different around local government finance. So timing-wise, that's virtually impossible. You know, even 26, 27, if the election's not until January 25, which it could be, then even 26, 27 is a relatively tight timetable. And the other thing, of course, is where's local government on any new government's agenda? So, you know, my personal perception is we've never been that high up. But, you know, once things change, that's the big risk. So I think we limp on for 1 year, 2 years, possibly three. And then once it's all in the air with the financial fair funding review, then we don't know. But from I suppose, looking at next year's budget, we're assuming pretty much like.
I know what it means in my domestic finances, but in your case, what does cash flat actually mean?
What it means is if we get 8 million this year, we'll get 8 million next year. But with inflation, 8 million next year is worth less than 8 million this year, because prices will have gone up, but the amount we'll get will stay the same. So it's a real terms cut.
Thank you.
Again, here's the, so you can see actually the grey on the MTFS, we were pretty prudent, you know, thinking that there was actually going to be some reductions in funding. So if you look at particularly those, if you ignore business rates retention, which is a black art of its own, if you look at the grant funding bits there, 0.4, 2.4, then we've looked at 0.4 and 3 if you look at sort of 24, 25. So you can see that, you know, 9.6 plays 10.2. So you can see we're actually being quite a bit more bullish. But when you actually, you know, it's only based on those movements in grants. The business rate retention is, again, it's a black art, but we do actually spend a lot of time an effort with business rate retention. Is a very detailed model that underpins it, and trying to work out what the projections are. Again, business rate retention is something that might change when the government gets round to looking at the system of local government financing, and that's a risk which maybe I'll touch on later. But you know, that's a key bit there. So this is bonus feature. So this is a bit of a windfall gain. So the business rates pool has been around for some time, and it was connected with the LEP. So, and again, it was something that historically fed into the LEP, and then we used to bid for money, and it used to come out for projects, etc. Now, you may or may not know that the LEP is due to cease existence by April next year. for various reasons, the money's not been out. We've had two or three years where money's not flowed from the pool to the LEP. And so there is a bit of a build up. So, you know, and then after a lot of horse trading, I think we finally agreed distribution. So it's, you can imagine, you know, that I think the county decided, you know, there was a, basically it's a third county, a third city district. The county wrote a paper suggesting they should get a bigger share of that. They wrote to the city. The city responded that they could come back when they've had more hot dinners. So that went round for quite a long time, and then we're back on thirds now. And then having had that discussion, then the districts had to agree between us how that money was going to be distributed. So anyway, we're now approaching a point where we'll get something. So hopefully that'll be over £1 million. There may be some strings attached to it around use of that money for regeneration aspects, but unless those, that hopefully those restrictions will be relatively low. So basically we've got enough regeneration, business development, economic development type spend areas where we could just apply it. There's potentially a bit of a windfall there, and how we apply that is, well, we haven't actually got the money yet, but how we apply that is something that we'll hopefully be able to do and hopefully build into this year's budget when we get final confirmation, which I have been expecting for some time. Mm-hmm. We've still not actually got the money, so until we've got the money in our bank account, but hopefully over £1 million, and that's something to think about. So revenues and benefits, so that went to cabinet a month or two ago, so that's going to save us an annual amount of money, which is broad. That won't start till the first, that doesn't start until November 2024. So there's obviously preparation to clean out, so this Chupi, etc., etc. There will be some implementation costs, or we're assuming there will be, to what extent they.
Can I ask a quick question on that? Forgive my ignorance, because I tried to follow it through scrutiny, but. With that change, what is or what will happen to obviously the pension liability that we'll be taking on, and is that included in this saving?
So there's no. So we've looked. This is complicated. So when it was outsourced originally, so the rules are that. For people working who worked for us and then went to work for Capita, Chupi, their pension rights were maintained, and there was a separate sub-pot within the overall Leicestershire local government pension scheme for Capita employees. Now, at that time, the council had a big deficit, but the sub-fund had to be funded 100%. So when those people transferred out, their pension was fully funded. But the impact of that was to increase the deficit on the rest of the council. Now, since time, there is still a deficit, but actually the deficit is a lot smaller. And you can actually track through, if you look at that through the statutory accounts, there's a negative pension scheme deficit, which is actually quite a lot smaller this year. It's about 9 million. I think historically it was up to 70, 80 million.
And that's shared around.
And that's just for the council. Now, in terms of Capita, there was a conversation I had with the pension scheme, and actually the Capita numbers were in surplus. So we changed, we made sure that surplus was going to come back to the council rather than go to Capita as a bonus for them. So that's a long way of saying it should be positive impact on us. It won't be anything that you'll notice in the budget, because the way the pension works is, you know, people will assume whether people are in, you know, pensioners who work for the council are getting healthier and living longer, what the rates of return are, and then, you know, small, given the length of these projections, you know, small changes in assumptions, let's assume everyone's living on bread and dripping, so therefore it's going to die a year earlier. The small changes make big differences to that deficit, but nonetheless, how it will manifest itself over time is that every 3 years through revaluation, they come up with a new employer contribution rate. So it's not what you see in the accounts is not really real, in my view, but it flows through into the employer contribution rate. So yeah, at the moment, which are pretty high, so it's around, depends what grade you are, but it's around about 30% of staff members. So,
those figures are there, then they're just direct.
They're just direct saving, yes. Yeah. So, sorry, long explanation.
Okay, thank you.
So that's all good. This is, as many of you will be aware of this, around the Carpenters Arms. So we're trying to manage this as best we can. We're just starting on this. So they've said, can we increase our rents? And we can't stop them or say, no, you can't. But what we can do is challenge them, which we are doing on a line-by-line basis to make sure that each element of the cost is justified. Where we might get lucky is that the government are regulating this sector. It's previously been unregulated. I think the key bit of it the government is trying to regulate actually is that people were basically doing this for profit. Now, the Carpenters Arms are actually a charity. As you may have guessed, it's sort of a very much a Christian charity. If you want to have rehab through them as the support of living, you've got to sign up to Bible readings every morning. But nonetheless, they're a charity, they're not trying to make profit. So probably not the target of the regulation. But nonetheless, the regulation may impact the way they're able to operate. So from a sort of selfish council financial point of view, it may well be that regulation reduces their capacity to deliver that service and the drain on our resources. So it may be that it won't be quite as bad, but you see at the bottom, it could easily be $250,000 either way on this one. It's just one of those big binary bolt-on numbers. I say with Kerry Summers, who's one of my colleague directors, very much working on this and speaking to the Carpenters Arms and seeing if we can do things like get them under the auspices of a registered provider. But again, there are technical difficulties with that.
Can I just ask why are they not a registered provider? Because they're a charity or just because they've come through in a different...
They are a charity providing this service. A registered provider it has a lot of wider responsibilities. They basically originated as a charity and wanted to provide this specific service as a registered provider. I guess your main objective is to provide social housing to a large number of people. A lot of them came out of, it's basically housing associations, things that arise from stock transfers from councils into housing associations. So most of the registered providers is quite a stiffish regulatory regime, so a relatively small charity would not necessarily naturally be very easily able to satisfy the regulatory requirements. So, I think this has been looked at, but for the Carpenters Arms, it's sort of beyond them. So the next idea was, could they operate under the umbrella of a registered provider? But again, that has difficulties and challenges as well. So,
it stops them being so flexible, I suppose.
Well, it's probably that, and again, when this is regulated, I don't know whether their religious aspect of it will prevent them, in a way from operating. I don't know whether that would necessarily allow Peter Valley to discriminate, but I don't know.
Is there any time scale on this?
No, that's true. Not really. They want to do the increases from 1st of July, which you can see the date that's gone by. The increases are sort of up to 150%. So we've gone, oh dear. And so on that basis, we are actually contracting with someone who specialises this and literally is going to take it apart line by line. Because the scale of our numbers, if we accepted something that was going to be 1.4 million a year, that would be an enormous problem. And if you look at our council tax about, which is sort of 10-ish million to say, well, actually 15% of everyone's council tax is going to support Partners Arms. It's I think there's about 70 residents. We have nomination rights for about 8 beds, and most people come from outside the borough. You know, a lot of them come from Leicester Prison, etc., which is all, you know, the sort of probation service or things, you know, probably thinks it's a right winner, actually. But so it's not, I wouldn't, you know, denigrate the service or say it's not a service that's required. It's just because the way the rules work, we're caught in the traps with this one. So again, there's some numbers. So we're basically guessing it's going to be a bit worse, but not as bad as it could be. So, you know, again, you know, if you could gainsay my assumptions on that, well, fair enough. But, you know, we're assuming there will be some mitigation, but some negative effect.
Oh, are we statutory obliged to pay the rent increases then?
Yes. Yeah. So if we...
Whatever they come out with, we've got to pay.
Well, we can challenge them. So we challenge them so they justify the costs. So, and there are things like medical expenses, which are partly justified. No. So we can exclude those, but it is supported living. So if they do have... You know, someone, they do have an accommodation, they have someone on reception, you know, to keep the residents drug dealers out, etc., then that is allowable. So it's all that, what's allowable, what's not, and we go through it. Ultimately, if we said, oh, well, we don't care what you say, we're not paying, then they are allowed, they could make a judicial review against that. You know, they could judicially review our decision. We can challenge them, but ultimately there's a process after which time we have to pay. So we're in that process, obviously delaying it. Maybe it gives them cash flow issues.
And if I could ask just one more question, you probably don't know the answer to this because it's such a small bit, will their rents be in line with council rents or
no.
More costly than that?
Much more costly.
So expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. So our rents are social rents. The rents that they charge, the amount of housing benefit we can recover on what they charge is based on the valuation office. So the valuation office will go something like the housing benefit on a room, single room in a shared accommodation is £80 a week.
Yeah.
But because of supported living, they'll say, well, actually, the cost of a room is £200 a week. And the way the rules are, we're basically in the bath for that £120 a week. So imagine if they're doubling the rents, then now... You know, the valuation office still thinks it's the same, so our share of it increases ever more. That's a tricky one. It's not just us, but it's, you know, we're not quite unique, but we are actually, in terms of districts, we are potentially towards the top one. And these are some of the changes. We've looked at, so just since January, these are some of the things we're looking at. So, for example, the 23-24 pay award, which we budgeted an amount, we don't know what the 23-24 pay award has not yet been.
Councillor Pott is
quick. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Simon, last year when we had this discussion, I think it was either myself or Jeff raised about the leisure contract.
Mm.
And I know we were looking at, you know, you said at that time we had about a year or more to go on it.
Yeah.
And you'd obviously have to go out to tender and stuff. Are we contractually obliged to stay with the current people, or could we just make a saving? Because for me, looking at that, the fact that we're going to have an adverse figure for 2 years running, and we did say this last year, that probably would be the case. Are we not contractually obliged to look around? Because if we could make a saving on that, it's a big expense. I think we should keep the leisure centre obviously going 100%, but are we getting value for money, and can we get better value for money from other people?
So
I know it's obviously chicken question, but it just seems a heck of a lot of money that we're forking out each year, when
So it's not, so what this actually is, so maybe I'll just move on. So it's not actually, it's less money we're going to have to pay out, it's money we'll no longer receive. So actually, in effect, we'll still be providing leisure for free. So in a way, limits are the effect on our budget.
Yeah.
If we can provide leisure services to residents at a net zero cost, then, you know, why wouldn't we? The issue we've got, so contractually, we are still in a contract. Practically, whether we're going to be able to receive that income is doubtful, because the way the leisure industry is generally, if we're not going to receive the income, we would probably be in a position, and I haven't checked the detail of the contract, to say, right, well, you're in breach, so we can then get out of that contract. We have actually, the issue is less, though, around getting out of it, more around hoping the providers survive, because there are lots of issues with providers around the country. So we're actually assuming, in practical terms, that's what's going to happen. There's one in, so that's not a great scenario. So there's a provider in Kent, I think it was,
yeah.
And they had to pay, they basically went, their provider went under. The leisure centres were closed for about 3 or 4 months until the council get the keys back. I'm not quite sure why it took them enough time to get the keys back. And it took them a couple of million quid to reopen the leisure centre. So, you know, in that sort of environment, that's not great, but it's not necessarily the worst that it can be. But that's our realistic assumption. So we are walking the line. You know, if we wanted to enforce a contract, we probably could do. But then by enforcing it, would it actually, you know, in practical terms, what would it mean? So we are looking at things like, we are managing this very closely. We are also looking at creating a spec. So if we needed to go out into do a procurement very quickly, we could do, and we're trying to mitigate this. But it is a very uncertain situation. It's, even if we got out of the contract and then we went out to a procurement, it's highly unlikely we would get anything like the existing contract, because the state of the market generally is quite poor. Again, I think it's Max Associates that Matt was speaking to, so they're a consultant that can help.
I think, did we not help to support this company through COVID as well?
Yes, we did. And I think that's part of the problem. I don't think things have quite recovered since COVID, and this in some ways it's more competition around, but quite a lot of the private gyms have gone under. So it's generally leisure is a bit of a struggle. So the whole state of the sort of public sector leisure provision is needed.
So at the moment it's cost neutral to us. We're not making anything, but we're not losing anything.
Based on those numbers sort of assume.
Yeah. So the reputational damage would be horrendous if we did close these.
And I think that's right. So I think closing leisure centres is not something we would do lightly. I think it is one of those things we have to look at very carefully. And over time, you know, we will have decisions to make on this. But what we don't want to be in the position is where we've got to do something very suddenly and it all implodes. We want, you know, whatever we do needs to be a controlled decision in an ideal world.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I was just wondering if you could stay somewhere. Obviously not get rid of it, as Brent said, that's the last thing we want to do. But I just wonder if we're getting full value for money with the people.
That's always a question on everything. I can very much assure you that we are looking at this very closely. I know Matt and myself have been
into it. That's great. Et cetera.
Thank you. So that was you can read those.
Back
best material. So this is.
Let me just split back, because I think you were going to tell us about pay award.
The pay award. Just basically, we don't know what the pay award is yet. So the unions haven't agreed. So the JNC staff pay award has been agreed. For NJC staff, the pay award is still to be agreed. So NJC staff is, if you aware of the council's grading structures, anyone on a PO grade or below, which basically is, I think it's all bar about 16 or 17 members of staff. So all of CLT plus there's about a few others, 4 or 5 others. Or a JNC.
CLT, please. What is CLT?
Sorry, the basically the heads of service and directors. So corporate leadership team. So basically directors, heads of service, plus a few other staff. So there's a couple in planning, IT, head of IT, or not head, they're not head of, but the legal service manager of the IT.
Approximately 17.
Approximately 17. I can't even remember how many.
And they're settled.
That's 3.5%, but that's about 17 people. We employ about 5 people.
So yeah.
It's, and that offer out there is £1,925 per full-time equivalent, whatever grade. So what last year is, you know, quite an interesting offer. It just means that if you're lower paid, your percentage increases higher. You know, it gives us practical issues around the scale points, etc.
That's been rejected, hasn't it?
That's been, yeah. There's a number of unions in play. So unions have said they're not going to go on strike, but they don't like it. GMB and Unite, who are the other major unions in the public sector, they're still, they're still voting on it, and that voting period is quite extensive. So you know, I think November that we may get some movement on this, but by the time we get to November, December, it's always like best settle. Let's settle so everyone gets their back pay, and then we're into, but then we'll start the process again in January. So, but from a financial point of view, we've got a guess. So you can see there were the three numbers we guessed.
And so Simon, are we accruing that back pay then at the moment? Is that, where is that going? Is that going into Treasury?
Well, in a way, it's money we would be paying out that we're not doing. So we are strongly advised. I think a year or two ago, we thought people would be wanting their money, and we've been very strongly advised that we can't say give people, we know we're going to get 5%. Could we give 3% now? But you know, we were very strongly advised not to do that.
But that money is squirreled away somewhere.
Well, it's sort of
in a different pocket.
It's we're not paying it out. At some point, we will expect. At some point, we will pay out.
What I'm meaning is that money is kept on one side. The prediction you've made of the pay. You've made a prediction.
We in the budget we had 4.75%. What we think it's going to be now is 6%. So that will probably manifest itself in actually, in the end of the day, that will potentially could be other things being equal and overspend in our pay budget this year. There's lots of other moving parts to the pay budget and the budget overall. So whether it is overall or overall underspend, but if we had everyone in post at the end of the year, who was at the beginning of the year, and we'd got the budgeting right correctly at the beginning of the year, then we would see an overspend at the end of the year. There's lots of bits and pieces, but yeah, we will at some point. We've obviously not disbursed the cash, so cash is sitting there in treasury. At some point, we will people will want their money. So again,
what I'm trying to get, it's not going to be a sudden shock to Charnwood.
It's a significant amount, but it's not within the scheme of our reserves and the amount of cash we've got. It's not. Not going to be a major shock to us now.
Okay. Thank you.
So interest rates are bad news for borrowers, but we have significant cash balances, so that's good for us. So we put more money in our budget this year, reflecting the higher interest rates. So interest rates are now, base rates are now about 5.25, if I remember correctly. Whereas if you go back 18 months, interest base rate was about 0.9, 0.75, 1%. So they increased very rapidly last year. We're seeing the full impact of this year. And actually interest rates, since we set the budget, interest rates, I think when we set the budget, we were thinking interest rates were going to peak about 4.75. So they're 0.5% above that. So in terms of that, we're doing pretty well. I think the joint November cabinet is the midterm treasury report, and we'll start to go to audit. So just for interest, if you look to that, one of the appendices shows what investments we had at a point in time on the 30th of September, and you can see the returns on those are above 5%. So I think we averaged 4.7-ish in the first 6 months, but if you look at what we've got out at the 30th of September, most of it's above 5%. So you know, I think overall this is quite strong. And given the interest rates, we think are like sort of, again, you can look to get a new forecast, a new report every time, you know, the Fed does something or inflation or unemployment or something, you know, you can change your markets will change, but we're assuming it'll stay stickier for longer, which is generally what we're being told at the moment, or interest rates will be higher for longer. So a bit more positive. So this year it's looking at we had 1.5 million. This is general fund only in the budget. I think we thought it might be 1.7. Where we are now, we looked at the information, I think it might be 1.8, 1.9. So it might even be above that this year. And if you track those along again, the interest rate staying a bit higher for a bit longer, that makes quite a difference. The other side of that is more sad cash balance, but at the moment we're not seeing, in theory, at the moment we're not seeing our cash balances particularly reduce.
Would it be fair to say then? So looking at that figure, obviously, I'll look at my bank account. Mm. We're actually spending more than we are bringing in, and realistically, the interest that we're receiving is keeping us to the right side of the line. Are we budgeting all that to remain?
Well,
that's sort of reliant on outside influences, if that's the case.
If you look at those numbers there for next year, and again, we'll potentially refine this, and I might give the finance team and the treasury team, but when I look at it, I think there might be a little bit more in there, but that's what we're assuming. If you go back a couple of years, the budget for interest was about £300,000.
Yeah.
So you can see that the difference is perhaps, you know, over £1 billion. And without that, we would have been quite tricky waters. But, you know, this actually has helped us very, very significantly. We are, and again, where do you think we'll be on interest rates in 3-4 years' time?
Yeah.
So that reflects sort of my sort of.
And again, so just again, labouring this point, what amount of money have we got invested at the moment that is producing that?
It does vary, but about 50 million quid. So if you look at the pattern of our cash flow, it actually peaks in January. And the reason is this, a lot of people pay council tax in 10 monthly instalments, and then February, March, somebody wants a 3 month. So it sort of peaks up to January, and then it sort of disappears in February, March. You pay precepts, because we collect the counties as well, and we pay the precepts out to the sort of county release and the fire in February, March. And so the balance is at a sort of low point at the end of March. So it's about, it's about 50 million pounds is where we were at the end of September. So second half of the year, if you look at, on average, October, November, December, January, we've got 4 months of increasing interest balances plus increased interest rates.
Just something you've just said there. Are we allowed to keep the interest that's paid to the county?
We're allowed to keep all the interest in our treasury fund that we are to keep. So we pay the counties precept in a sort of scheduled way, but yes, we keep it all.
Okay. Good. Yes. And that goes for the police and the...
Yes, it does. The other side of it, of course, is that if there's a shortfall, we still pay the precept in accordance with the amount. Yeah. So if the collection isn't...
And do we get paid for collecting it on their behalf?
No.
So there is,
I can't quite remember how it works, but there are the collection fund. We do get some, the way housing benefit works is that we pay out a lot and then we get back a lot, but obviously it's a little bit less than we pay out, but then there's also an amount for the collection account. So I guess in a way we probably don't get paid. Don't think we get paid anything accounts, that we obviously get the interest.
Yeah.
Swings and roundabouts.
Thank you.
they met then. So this is where we sort of think where this is where we thought would be. So this is pre-budget. This is if we do nothing. Sorry,
Simon. Again, reverting back to conversations from last year, and I think it's applicable now. I can see what your numbers are for the budgeted use of reserve this year or next financial year, and then going forward. I made a point quite openly last year about having enough for a rainy day fund. Why do we have to keep tapping into the reserves? I'm a bit worried that in 2 years hence, we are looking to spend potentially between 2.5, maybe even 3 million into our reserves. At what point are we going to plan for not using our reserves to that extent? What is the long-term strategy? Because I think we've got to sort of try and move away from this principle where the reserves is going to plug the gap and maybe think of a better approach.
Well,
I'm sorry to be cynical about it, but I think we've got to, like Mark's just said about, we're taking less in than we're actually, you know, making. But what point, because then at the end of the day, the people are going to be hardest are the people who are suffering the most at the minute, who are the taxpayer. And then obviously, then we've got to put our taxation up to make sure we're plugging the gap. There must be a better approach. I know everyone uses reserves, but that's a heck of a lot of money. Isn't there a strategy than using 2.5 million out of reserves?
Well,
I'm sorry to say, but it must be
I think when we get to the approach, I think that, that will sort of address some of that question. But it largely comes down to arithmetic. So I will say that those, so in 23-24, that was the budget that was set. So that's the estimated use. So 1.3 million is what we budgeted for at September, and this will change. So this is basically out to that September. We thought we might be about £200,000 ahead of the game. So if those numbers are right, and no chance, but if they were, if they actually turned out to be bob on, we'd be using £1.1 million of reserves this year. So that's the budget. What the subsequent 2 years are, and actually you can see the 1.6 and the 2.5, what we're seeing now is, what we're assuming now is something a little bit more benign. So what we're seeing there is 1.1 for next year and 1.2 for the year after that, so more benign. But that is always if we do nothing. So the budget setting this year is how are we going to address that. Now, in practical terms, it's either, you know, there are limits to how we can raise our income. So there, on the council tax side of it, there is there are capital rules at the moment, so that is that restricts us. If nothing was released, you'd have an interesting political decision, because if you look at Charnwood's council tax, as a percentage, if you look at your council tax bill, Charnwood is a very small, relatively small bit. So, you know, before I started in local government, you get the council tax, what's it like, £1,500? That's a nightmare. You don't bother looking. This is the county, this is the police, this is the fire, But if we, so it's ours is relatively small. If we were to increase our council tax from where it is now, which is sort of bottom decile, it's about the 11th decile up to the average, that would be about £40 per band of the property more. So if you look at our council tax, it's about 150. I can't quite remember that it's in there. It's about 150. The top district council tax is Ipswich. So if you don't live in Ipswich, you're paying over £300 a year. So, but if the average is about 190, I think. So you go from about 160 to about 198, £40 a house times 50,000 band D properties. So, you know, it'd be sort of over £2 million. And I wouldn't say our problems will be over forevermore, but that, if you look at those deficits, we're suddenly getting 2 million. That's a winner. But the moment, the way it's capping is, we can't do anything about that. In terms of government grants, we get what we get. In terms of fees and charges, we look at these quite hard every year. So things like garden waste, you know, we've sort of upped that towards a sort of second quartile. So it's not outrageous, but moving up there. So there's limits to what we can do with garden waste. There's things that are planning fees are statutorily set. So, you know, car parking is something we look at. So we do look at these, but these aren't
a small fry.
Well, some of them are relatively significant, but if we can sort of squeeze out 50, 100, 150,000, that's good. But when we're looking at some of the government grants money, where we might be down £500,000, you've got inflation on contracts and payrolls, you know, £250,000, then it's been a struggle. So the only way you do this is to cut services. So if you want to make it sustainable, you cut services. Then, so that's the choice. The problem I have is section 1.1, obviously. Back to the government settings. We don't know. So I put some numbers together, so it's my fault. And this is my guess of where things are going based on the information I have at a point in time. But what I'm saying is it looks quite tricky, but what I can't say, it'll definitely be tricky in 2 or 3 years' time. So, if we wanted to balance the budget, we could do, but, you know, we would be into things like closing the town hall, closing the museum, everything extraneous we do, it's gone, you know, grants to the voluntary sector, all of these things, toilets and statutory service, all of these things, they would be gone. So members make the decision, you know.
We are in control of what we spend, not necessarily
that's the point going to come in, which is why I think it's looking at government.
It is.
But thanks, Simon. Anyway,
my job's not that difficult. I just make it look difficult.
Well, we suspect.
We're gathering now, aren't we?
Yes. So.
You just moved dots.
So this is just. These are where I think the risks are.
I've got another question there. That 2-point, your responsibility, if we get down to that figure, what is the process there? What do you have to do then?
Nothing.
It isn't. Yeah. Got to
no, so at that point, nothing, that's not physically abandoned. So at that point, the council is still solvent. So I, section 151 office would like to see that balance a bit higher as a minimum balance, as a minimum rainy day fund. But at that point, we're still solvent. But if we did nothing and then the following year, we might be, you know, £2 million and all of a sudden our balance is zero. So I look at if you did the financial training, I've talked about some of the councils that have really gone under, like, you know, the Croydon, Woking, Thurrock, you know, Nottingham City, there's one or two others whose names fail. You know,
I remember you talking about Northampton.
Northampton stuck their head in their sands. Thurrock, you know, made some
bad choices.
You know, what were they smoking at Woking? I do actually read in this, partly just my own entertainment, but partly, are there any lessons there learned for us? And actually a lot of them, so there's some poor governance, some dysfunctional officer-leader relationships. You get a lot of them are people who've sort of basically borrowed a lot of money and then they've sort of borrowed the relatively long-term projects on relatively short-term terms. So the interest rates I think Woking, for example, they have to refinance a lot of their loans. So rather than at 0.5%, 1%, 2%, the sun paying 5, 6, 7, and these developments they hadn't come on stream, the income wasn't at the same level as they were projecting, plus the overall value of their projects is much lower. I think Woking have got lots of half finished stuff as well. So hence they've got, you know, you can see the scale of our numbers, our budget, sort of our net budget's about 80 million, our overall spend is about 30 million. I think Woking own about 1.8 billion, likely rise to 2.5 billion. So, I mean, they're...
Are they unitary?
No, they're district council, slightly smaller than we are.
Good luck. Oh, that's lightning.
So, but they're essentially a black hole for money with a few council services attached to it.
suppose.
So the county council, sorry to interrupt you, Chair, is obviously making noises about fair funding.
Yes.
Would that fair funding affect us as well?
So the county have been banging this drum for quite a long time. They've compared themselves to Surrey, which hasn't necessarily endeared themselves to Surrey, but in terms of relative funding. But they have got, personally, I think they have probably got a bit of a case. But you know, every most councils have problems. So we've got our issues were one on business rate retention at AstraZeneca. So this is history. Any of you weren't here, but when the business rate baseline, if you exceed your business base baseline, you keep a bit of that, you know, to keep some money. So for us, baseline was set. It was literally about 2 or 3 weeks later, AstraZeneca, who were our biggest rate payer, £2.3 million, vacated the site. So we were below the baseline and this sort of scheme of saving, etc. So our business rate retention is taking us about 5 years or so before we got back to par, and then last 4 or 5 years we've crept above it. Northwest Leicestershire, Roxhill, those big sheds around East Midlands Airport, some of those individual warehouses are sort of £1 million, £2 million, £2.5 million in terms of rateable value. So they've gained about £5 million from rebasing. Now the government, it's about £1.2 billion a year the government have let go. They was allegedly going to rebase everything every 3 years. I think it started in 2012-13 and they've not done it yet. So in terms of, although they would keep the system the same, but they could just insist on some rebasing or some sort of crew thing looking at individual authorities. So Northwest Leicestershire, who've basically, you know, their house tax is higher than us, but they've, you know, advertised very heavily, they've not had to raise it. Well, yeah, this business rate retention is good for them. But if you look at Opie and Wigston, where, you know, where housing growth, business rate growth in Opie and Wigston, well, there's, I think there's two allotments they can build on, but that's about it. So Opie can't do anything. You've got small authorities like Melton, you know, so their refuse collection costs go up quite heavily because, you know, Melton's two farms and a pork pie factory, but they're all very well spread apart. So the cost of collection high. So, you know, Melton's small and rural and sparse. Opie's small, but very urban and densely populated. You know, we've got issues with business rates. Others, you know, others are maybe, it depends what your council tax, you know, your council tax really comes down to what you were doing in the 1990s, but with capping, which again has been in for 10 years, you know, you're trapped with whatever your historical rate was. So in terms of risk.
Sorry, just a couple of questions. I mean, I probably guess the answers. You said that our council tax is in the bottom. I think you said 11%.
Yeah. Like that.
Despite the fact that we're very low down, the government cap on what we can raise it to still applies to, what was it, 5% or something?
It's basically 2% or 3%. I think it's 3% for districts. It's 2% for tier of it's 3% or £5, whichever is the greatest. Now, because we're low, the £5 is a higher amount, because if you're Ipswich, then the 3% is higher. And to make sure, and it usually describes as 2.99, because if there's a small error in the calculation or small vagary, if it's 3% and then someone decides to challenge it, then we've got to have a referendum when we're going to allow this. And then if we're going to rebuild everything, then a bit of a world of pain. It wouldn't finish the council, but it administers a nightmare, and it's £100,000 or so, you know, every time you do a billing run. So
you err on the side of caution.
So err on the side of caution to make sure we're not going to fall foul of that. But the capping rules, they are reset every year, so we don't know. So the DCN, the District Councils Network, has lobbied government, can we increase the limit? So police authorities have had a limit of £12. So, you know, we increased it to £12. Personally, I think, why not to help those lower council tax authorities like us and say you can increase it up to this amount or up to a medium position or something like that, which all of which would help us. And then politically it would be, do you want to put on a 28% or whatever it is council tax increase this year? But if I second one fine one officer, I please do so, because saying that yes is out of
And I'm assuming, in fact, it's that there was been a political decision over the years.
There was quite a few years where we didn't put it up at all.
Yes. Sometimes it was. So in the when it started in 12-13, there was 3 or 4 years where the government basically offered council tax freeze grants so that council tax didn't get increased. So at that time, the political decision was this council to take those council tax freeze grants. So they initially lasted 2 years. I think they lasted 3 years for the initial tranche. And then there was council tax freeze grant the next year, but some of them were only then 1 year. The problem with that is if you sort of the council tax freeze grant covers the amount you would otherwise have raised your council tax by. So you're all right in that year, but then you lose the compounding effect of council tax rise increase year on year. I think I lied awake in bed one night and did a sort of mental back-to-back calculation. So it's nothing dreadfully auditable, but I think we would have been £500,000, about £750,000 better off had we increased our council tax in line with the 3% cap in those years rather than accepting the freeze grants. So that was sort of a political decision. Since then, we've always raised council tax in line with the cap. So we've always maxed out on it, but that maximisation is obviously pretty restricted based on central government rules, or unless we wanted to go down the referendum result. But, you know, please, you can just imagine that thing. You get brave local politician who sort of put that out to the local population to vote on. Would you like to pay more tax? Please vote on it, please.
And you said the working balance, I think, described as is, well, going down to potentially 2.4.
Let's be clear, that assumes we do nothing.
Yeah.
So that's just, if we're not going to do that. So, and that in a way informs the budget approach.
Mm. Yeah, I'm thinking that I'm comparing that mentally to my current account, for example.
Right, okay.
So and you've said also that we've got 50 million invested.
Yes.
So if it came to it, you could actually take some money from reserves to use. And I'm probably talking heresy here, but theoretically it's possible.
Well, the £50 million isn't all ours.
No.
All right, okay.
So that's the trick with it. It does represent, so we've got the working balance is rainy day money, and it is revenue balance. So that means we can use that for anything to cover services. We've got other balances. So we've got balances in the housing revenue account. We've got balances, capital balances. So from usable capital receipts that we can't use for revenue purposes, but obviously it's cash balances. Effectively, it translates into cash balances sitting there, which do generate income. So, you know, until we spend the money, we generate the income. There's also money that obviously we collect the council tax on the county, the police, fire, and that's money we have in. And there's a timing difference between when we get it in and pay it out. So there's money there. So that 50 million is not all of it is actually ours. And of the rest of it, some of it we can spend and some of it we can't, or some of it we can spend on anything and some of it we spend, some of it we can't. We also hold things like, again, accounting-wise, we've got other revenue-type reserves for things like, again, business rates relief. So we've had a lot of business rate relief, so we've effectively had the cash in, but technically it sort of takes 2 or 3 years to unwind, so we've got reserves in for that. And we obviously have provisions for things that we think might happen. So when you sort of add these things up, so there's a mix of money that's ours and money that's not. But the 2.5 million is the working balance. That is a rainy day fund. That is the amount that if the worst happened, then
you could still empty bins and
hopefully, I'm going to revisit it this year. Because that 2.5 million is broadly based on 6 weeks net expenditure, which is sort of a knitting pattern number, which you know, pick a number in. Yeah. But I think the latest guidance doesn't give you any of those formulas. So have a look at it. I think I'll probably come up with a similar number when I'll have a look at it. But we'll, so things like what's your level of indebtedness? So because our indebtedness is actually on the general fund side, it's pretty low. our risk level is. Yeah, we're not exposed to big movements in interest rates, so that makes our
leading on to what you've said, well, where are we on corporate plans? When it comes upon you, sort of delivering things like the, from the general fund, the housing revenue account, because for the last few years we've been quite behind, haven't we? I think we only spent 30%.
We've had some issues which are pretty well documented or pretty well been over on the contractors in the sub housing and the HRA, the housing revenue account. So in our housing stock. So yes, that is the case. In terms of corporate plan, there will be a new 4-year corporate plan that will be coming forward in, I think, March in the springtime, covering the next 4 council years. And so there's a corporate plan, and then every year there's a corporate delivery plan which sets out what we're going to do year by year, and that's what creates the metrics and the actions which the quarterly performance report.
But if we don't spend that, effectively we haven't spent that money, have we, for the last few years? So that reverts back to Treasury, I think.
The way we can keep our we keep that money on the housing revenue account. There is a bit that potentially reverts back to Treasury, which is around right to buy receipts. So we get, that's a complicated story. So if people buy the house, and then if we don't necessarily manage to reinvest, then that's quite difficult. But So we're only allowed to keep so much. I think some of it goes to Treasury anyway, and some of it goes to Treasury if we don't.
I have asked that question a couple of times and never had an answer, have I? Even though I've been told, we'll send you the answer. I wanted to know how much we kept of the house and the sales. And
it's a relatively low percentage. It's not a high percentage.
But the other one was if we sold a house because it wasn't financially viable for us to do it up, and so we lost it off our stock but sold it. Do we keep that 100% of that to reinvest, or I don't know what happens to that, because there are some things that we can't rent because they're banned, but we could sell them, and then can we keep all of that to reinvest?
I've never heard of us doing that scenario though.
We've raised it, which
follows on from the voids discussion, garages discussion, what to do.
We've not bought things because of that issue. I think we would basically repair something if it was ours, if it was a former council.
Perhaps you can get Rebecca to note that, maybe ask the relevant.
Because some of the voids have been empty for years and years because nobody wants to live there. We're not talking just garages.
No, that's different. I think that's the sheltered accommodation one. So that's being redeveloped. So they're the problem.
No. These were not sheltered. No, I mean like St Michael's Court. We know that in Thurmston. So it's nothing to do with the sheltered. But there are some flats and some areas that people just don't want to move in because it's in such bad repair, and it's not financially viable for the council to have it repaired either. Mm. But we could possibly, we've said, could we put it on the market, sell it at a knockdown price or whatever, so that we could use that money to reinvest and buy?
Yeah, I don't know. I suspect we would, I suspect the right to buy rules would apply, but I don't, yeah. I don't know that. In that
scenario, it applies to any council.
Sorry?
Possibly the question applies to any council owned land or property.
Well, it depends if it's not, if it's in the housing revenue account. So if it's to do with our housing stock and the garages and the shelter, that's the HRA. We've obviously got this building, for example, as part of the general fund. So those rules don't apply.
I think it's an interesting question, particularly if we're trying to raise revenues. Mm. It would be interesting to know whether we'd get the revenue from any.
Well, we would only be able to, we can only use it for capital item, for capital anyway.
Yeah, to buy another one.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with right to buy is with by the time people have taken a discount and the premiums had a cut, so you sell one house and then you probably need to sell about, you know, five, six, seven, eight before you can actually replace it.
But for somebody like us, we can't just pick numbers out because we've got no concept, no ideas to go on. We don't know whether it's £10 or £10,000, if you know what I mean.
So
it would be interesting.
It's nice to know.
I'm sure we can reg out the rules on that one, specifically if we sold a void. I wasn't aware of that, actually. I thought we just generally...
It was one of the voids, and it was Matthew, wasn't it, Bradford?
Yeah.
And he said he was... they were thinking about that, weren't they?
Yeah. I think we'll have to work with Justin as well.
I've seen one that's an council house that's just recently sold. It's on...
Yeah, but have we sold it, or we've sold it.
We've got one or two properties that aren't... that are general funds, so that might it might be if it's Matt, that might be a general fund property, because the HR Pete Oliver deals with Matt doesn't deal with the housing revenue account, so I don't know. So it might be a general fund property, which might be different.
So just bring back to the question: does the underspend in the housing revenue account just have to be
the way it works is that in the general fund capital plan, sometimes it's removed from the capital plan, sometimes it's rolled forward, and that's in the report. With the housing revenue account, if we don't spend it all, it sort of then drops into the housing revenue reserve. So it drops into the what we call the financing fund, but actually that can be used to repay debt, or actually it can be used to reinvest in stock, and that comes out of the 30-year business plan. So that's
we have to pay some of that back, don't we?
We do. So again, in the capital strategy, our plan to set it out. I mean, the £30 million repayment is due in October next year.
Okay, thank you.
So, sorry, there's a few risks here. So just going through these. So this rate retention is a risk. Government grants is a risk. Inflation, so every percentage adds 1,000 to our inflation. Staff costs, so again, there's about the pay award. There's contract risk, so our contracts are subject to inflation. So not that, you know, Circa and ID Bird, you're not saying it's not necessarily going up, but it's in line with what we thought, you know, income stream. So car parking's down, but might be something there. Planning is ahead. Is that due to the 5-year supply or the planning cycle? But you know, we'll have to make some decisions around where we think they're going to land. You know, there's lots of income streams, so there's a bit of a portfolio effect. Some of it is a general trend, but within that, there's a bit of a portfolio effect. Here we go with the Environment Act, so again.
Simon, can I ask you, what is an efficient waste authority?
No. this is a government term. So they are going to define what an efficient waste authority is. This is a big concern, it's difficult to be too cynical on these things in my view, but what they'll probably do is pick on the lowest cost provider who will have particularly favourable conditions in terms of how they collect. So they won't be sparse, they won't be dense in terms of tower blocks, it'll be the cheapest one, and they'll go you all need to be as efficient as that. We'll go, oh, well, hang on, we've got a big area of the borough, or we've got lots of tower blocks. But the government will decide what an efficient waste authority is. So this, amongst the sector, is a concern, but I can't tell you what it is.
Okay, but that potentially, with that 1.7 million of garden waste income could go if they
That's open-ended. I doubt they would, but in terms of the legislation, there's no reason why they couldn't.
Okay.
I think there'll be a lot of squealing from a lot of districts. So whether that would happen or not, who knows?
Oh.
Do you know, have you read that book?
I have. Oh,
Ballerina.
The Ballerina, but I don't think you've read about the Ballerina, are you? Blank Swan. Is it worth reading?
It's Nicholas Nassim Taleb.
I suppose it's hard work, I'm not into.
So basically, a black swan was something that it's one of the Donald Rumsfeld unknown unknowns. So something no one would imagine what a black swan was like until one came from Australia and went, oh, there is such a thing. It's something that you just can't envisage. So I'm just saying this stuff, that there's unknowns and
that.
Anyway, I thought it was a nice picture for black swans.
It was a nice picture.
A bit of wild life into the room on the presentation.
Thank you.
A
big presentation for you to put together on that, so thank you very much.
That's okay. So there is some upside. So this downside, we're actually, the officer wise, we're better at projecting, saying we have to head of service on what's that. That looks difficult. Are there any upsides? Oh, no, no, no. And then historically, we have had unspent, so they do happen. And that's just illustrative, really. But, if you assumed the sort of years go outwards, so if you assume everything good happens, we're 5 million better off. You assume everything bad happens, we're 6 million worse off. The numbers are indicative, but you can see it's just designed to show there's quite a bit of, you see Environment Act garden waste, could be 1.7 million. So,
going back to council tax again, with these large developments coming up to it. So we'll use Barra for the sake of argument, because I don't want to use that. And the amount of houses that got on there. Why doesn't the precept reduce on that, because we're getting more revenue in?
Yes, we are, but then in theory it does help. So it would help, but I think it's about 60-70 pounds a property to collect on the refuse collection contract. So half it is just
gone.
It's gone immediately. Over time, if we were to double our housing stock, and then you were to imagine that actually we weren't going to increase the number of parks we maintained, et cetera, et cetera, it would start to make a difference. And it probably, in theory, is making a difference. But the problem is there are lots of moving parts, and there are lots of other things moving very negatively against us.
Yeah.
So HRA, just a very quick note, basically the cost. Oh, no, we've gone.
There's a bad question, Simon. You probably preempted what I was going to say. The £79.2 million we've borrowed to exit the housing subsidy scheme. A, who have we borrowed that from? Is that central government or someone else? And the second point is, I can see the breakdown in repayments and when it's due to be paid. Now, I know at the present time, Charmant exists in its current form, but for instance, if we did become a unitary authority at some point or whatever, is there a potential that debt might get called in early and we have to pay that off in one lump sum?
Well,
what? Because we're working on the presumption that literally we're paying that in a quite a consolidated payment scheme. We all know in the background that conversation has been going on since I worked with you, Simon.
Yeah.
And it's I don't think it's ever going to go away. So what happens in that situation? Because I don't understand that we've got this nagging debt here that we've done or consolidated over a big period of time, but actually within the rights people say, hang on a second, where is this money still? What are you going to do about it?
So it's borrowed from the Public Works Loan Board, which is basically part of it.
Yeah.
We've borrowed it in various lumps, which mature at various times. So next year's a million, then the next 3 or 4 years, 5 years, it's 2 million, then it goes to 3 million. So that's put that at the bottom. So that's how it works. If we became a unitary, then this would just novate to the new organisation. I think one of the exciting things that Adrian Ward tells me about West Northamptonshire, I mean, when he's due to start there, is there a big argument about the Northamptonshire County Council debt and how it's going to be shared amongst those two, West Northamptonshire and North Northamptonshire unitaries, plus all the stuff that's come from district. So
it would just transfer across. Okay.
Yeah, I assume so. I mean,
okay, thanks. Probably
would be my problem, so I'm fine.
Those payments are fixed, aren't they? They are not.
Yes, they are.
Fluctuated.
So that's one of the challenges we've got. Would we? The interest rates on these are pretty low, so would we want to refinance them? Well, we probably would, the interest rates higher, so we probably repay them in the early years and then refinance them.
So the final payment of 5 million in 2062, which you and I won't be around.
Yes.
Well, I will. And,
well, if you want to ask me about it, what do you think it is, Simon? It's one not for no.
Yes. Well, remember.
When we have a sort of the budget scrutiny panel sales in 2016.
It might be happening in an alternative area. So is our balance then nil?
We would have paid it off, but in theory, we would have paid it all off by then. In practice, I would guess in the intervening period, we may choose to refinance something. So basically, roll over the debt. So take out, rather than paying something back, we'll take out another loan. So we need to repay it. And that's what we consider with the 30-year business plan to, you know, if we want to invest in the housing stock. So it's called the refinancing reserve. So there's about £12 million in that, which will actually pay everything off until...
Because obviously our housing stock has a date, it's ending life date, isn't it, a lot of it. So that's the decision that we make. Do we close that estate down completely, demolish it, and then build ourselves or housing associations? And that's a conversation.
This is the debt situation. What we actually do with the stock is different.
Yeah.
Okay. I now need to apologise to you all. So there's some dates. Ian, are you with us? Can you hear us, Ian?
Yeah. I just switched off my camera because it was breaking the sound a bit. But I've been here the whole time.
No, that's fine. So apologies. I really must apologise. I need to visit the facility. So I was hoping Ian might entertain you with the approach for a couple of minutes until I reach. So apologies. Well, cups of coffee this afternoon is taking its toll.
Okay, hi everybody. Well, I don't know if this means we want to move on to the final part on the agenda, I think, which is what is the approach for the setting the budget for 24-25. And I did put a quick report together, which I circulated, so hopefully you'd had a quick look at that. So, Chair, if you're happy, what I could do is talk through the highlights, or I don't know if there are any highlights actually, talk through some of the main points in that and then kind of open it to any questions. Would that be a reasonable approach?
That's fine, Councillor Ashton. If you want to turn your camera off because you're coming in and out a little bit, we can hear you clearly. I think that probably helped.
Okay, I'll switch the camera off again, and like I said, I'll just I won't read through the whole report because, you know, that would be a bit tedious, and I think some of it is what Simon's already mentioned, but I think it's worth maybe saying a few things which are particularly about our approach to it. So the first part of the report is talking about the MTFS, which we've heard a lot about, and obviously there's a difference between the MTFS, which is the annually published strategy document, and the ongoing spreadsheet, which shows these changes within that document. And I think, like you, I probably, when I looked at the MTFS for last year, you know, it doesn't look a particularly good forecast with that using up of the projected working balance. But I think, as Simon was saying, this is without any management decisions. But I think the other thing is it also includes a lot of variables, or a lot of unknowns. And some of those will be realised and some of those won't be. And I think there's a tendency for it to be slightly conservative as well. So I think if you look now, for instance, on the actual MTFS from last year, the 24-25 was predicted that the working balance will go down to 2.8 million, whereas now the prediction is it will go down to 4.1. So there does seem to be this shift as management decisions and risks are mitigated, that it does shift in that decision, but in that way. But it also means that we do need to keep an eye on it, and we do need to make decisions and with the aim to move into working balance where we're not using that. But the real sticking point is, as was stated, that is we don't really want to go beyond 2.5. Now, we're a little way off this at the moment, and where we get to 2.5 has already shifted due to various events and also due to various decisions. So basically, this is the main thing we want to keep an eye on, that we keep moving that out so that we never get below the 2.5. It's kind of what we want to keep planning against. So, the other thing is that I mentioned the outturn reports show that there's been a shift from the MTFS. And like I said, it looks like our financial position was better and it has improved since then as well. Again, partly because of events happening and partly because of decisions being made. So what are we doing going forward? So obviously what we need to do at the moment, or what we're actively doing at the moment, is we're looking at all the revenues and expenditures for next year, and we're looking at where we could potentially make decisions to try and reduce this use of the working balance, but also looking also at the impact of this might be on services. And obviously the statutory things that we need to make sure we deliver as well. And there's also some ambitious things such as our environment strategy, which we need to plan into the budget as well. So where we are at the moment is the senior leader team, together referencing the directors of the service, have come up with some options for change. And part of these informed by what we as cabinet said, what our priorities were, what we would like to see. And now we're looking at a number of those. So that they include cost savings due to cuts in service, also revenue increase by changing various things to try and increase revenue, but also looking at pressures again. So there are some potential outgoings which weren't considered in the original budget, so we need to offset that against any savings. And we're also looking at any projects we can initiate which might have a longer term impact. So again, so it wouldn't make sense for us to make knee-jerk decisions on cutting things where it's based on a prediction which might or might not be realised, when actually we could use this to actually put in place a longer term benefit. So again, the revenues benefits is a good example of that. It's a fairly long project. A lot of options were looked at, and it should end up with a better service and also some cost savings. So that's where we are at the moment. One thing I put in is obviously part of this, one of the first items with this meeting was to look at the agenda for the budget scrutiny panel. And I did put that within the setting for all the meetings and how we get to the various drafts of the budget before then it appears before the next budget scrutiny panel. So obviously there's a number of dates there and a number of things which need to happen and a number of consultations where the budget gets scrutinised. So where we are at the moment is this Thursday, the senior leader team will be presenting the options for change to the cabinet, which will then start the discussion about decisions which will be proposed, which will then change the either expenditure or revenue in the budget for 24-25. I think that's as much as I need to say about what it is. I don't know if there's any clarification on that or any questions on what the approach is going to be.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Ashcroft, and thanks for putting this report together. Even though you're away, we appreciate it, and thank you for attending. So anybody like to ask a lead member any questions? No. I'll kick off. I'm interested in, we had a senior leadership team that were looking at the corporate plan. Is that still happening? Does that still get dealt with? Because obviously that's going to be reviewed in the spring. But I'm interested as to where we are on that really, and you know. know, whether there is any sort of cash or capital that won't be spent that will revert back to the treasury. Simon, are you?
Yeah, I mean, we are going through the corporate plan. The corporate plan's pretty high level. It's a pretty high level document. So we are, we're in the process of developing that. And, you know, I think we're at the moment, I think we're just going out with a resident survey. So we'll get those sort of views, but it is fairly high level and wouldn't necessarily drive expenditure. In terms of money going back to the treasury, the only bit really, there are specific grants that we may not spend, but they're pretty much, I'm not aware of anything at the moment. The other one is right to buy, really. So we haven't got anything, I don't think we've got anything at all material where we've got this back, you know, substantial amounts of money. Occasionally you get money for, you know, things like business grants, but that's never our money anyway. It's just basically if we don't spend it, we have to send it back. If we overspend slightly, then it's on our dollars. but you know, there's no risk that we've got anything material where we're going to have to
I'm just trying to identify the areas where we might have money coming back to treasury, because obviously the budget as it looks at the moment is going to be quite dependent on, you know, interest from money that we have.
If you did an analysis, I've not done it for a while, but if you were sort of to look at what the balance, if you get the financial statements, which are not really much use to anyone really, but if you were to get them and look at our reserves, you could say they are our reserves, and then that would add up to a certain amount, and then our cash balance would be an amount above that, which would be the money we owe to the county. So that's how you would look at it. We haven't got a couple of million pounds at risk where we might have to pay it back. You know, I suppose if I try and think of those areas, it's Section 106, I guess, is a risk. Section 106 is when the developers hit the triggers, that's an amount of money, and then that's for a sort of community centre or whatever. So maybe the parish takes 2 or 3 years to get itself into gear to do the community centre. So we have the £500,000 and earn money on that over time. And if the centre doesn't get built, then that potentially reverts back to the developer. But that's a different thing. We spend a lot of time and effort monitoring that to try and avoid that happening where we can. But again, in the scheme of things, in the scheme of our numbers, it is not a material issue as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Anybody have anything further? Okay. Well, if that's the case, we're due looking at the schedule. For the next meeting on the 12th of December, when we should have the draft budget to look at.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. It should be, I think the cabinet may be the 14th.
That's right. Draft budget proposed cabinet, yes. So we're on the 12th.
The draft budget for consultation will be published then, so we should have a chance to look at it. What we won't know at that point is what the government's financial settlement is. So it's one of our challenges. We have to set the budget without necessarily knowing what that funding is, which if it's very, very different, will create a bit of angst across Christmas when we have to put it together. So it's coincidentally often comes out on the day of the cabinet report. So the announcement sort of 2 o'clock on the Thursday, and then you have cabinets at 6. So it's very often seems to work out like that for whatever reason. But yes, we would have by that stage we will have the proposals and, you know, specified savings where we won't necessarily have anything, we won't necessarily specify them, but we'll say, you know, we need to commit to, you know, finding this much money, and then again it's similarly precious. So there'll be things in the budget that will be specific or general, so you can, you know, scrutinise specific proposals where it's general, you can then ask the question, well, you know, how confident are you about realising it, that sort of thing. And then this is what we're proposing to use for reserve, so you can obviously ask or query that at whatever level.
Okay, well, I think if there's no further questions, then we can draw this meeting to a close. Thank you for everybody attending. Thank you, Councillor Ashcroft. Enjoy the rest of your birthday.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah, apologies if I was a little bit glitchy, but I did manage to hear everything. So thank you for the questions. A lot of them, I asked exactly the same question. So it's really good to hear that we're all questioning the same sort of thing. So again, I look forward to this panel's comments on the budget when it comes out.
Well, if you're available on the 12th, we can offer you, if you'd like to come along, we'd love to be there.
Yeah, sure. You know, that's if they get it, on the 12th, is this prior to the?
It's 2 days before the cabinet meeting, I believe.
Yeah, so. Let me just have a look. Yeah, I think I can be invited to this, and I'd be happy to come along.
Lovely. I think the lead member is invited as a matter of course, obviously, when we can necessarily meet.
Yeah, that'll be great. Okay. All right. Well, we'd love to meet you both then. Thank you, everybody. Stop recording.
Thanks, everybody. Bye then.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks.